Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome to the Leaders Toolbox here on Radio at Firehouse.com. My name is Peter Matthews, and I'm here today with the host, Rich Gassaway, Fire Chief in Roseville, Minnesota. Hey, Rich, good to see you last month in California. It was a beautiful, sunny time that we had at the Firefighter Near Miss Symposium. I know FDIC is coming up, and you'll be speaking there. What's going on with you these days?
Well, Pete, back up just a moment and talk about the Near Miss Symposium. You say sunny California. As you know, being a part of the program, we didn't get to spend much time in the sun. The stakeholders of the Near Miss reporting system got together in San Diego for a day and a half of some pretty intense presentations and breakout sessions to talk about the Near Miss reporting system and the future of it and where it's going and some ways to make it even better than it has been. And I'm very pleased to have been part of that and look forward to some additional enhancements to the National Firefighter Near Miss Reporting System, a very important tool for helping firefighters to prevent line-of-duty deaths. So, with a plug for that. Coming up for me is the University of Maryland's National Fire Service Staff and Command Program. That runs March 12th to 19th, and I'll be doing a program there on fire ground decision-making under stress. And then in April, I will be at the FDIC doing a program also on fire ground command decision-making under stress. That particular topic is one that is near and dear to my heart, and how fire ground commanders can be better decision makers when they're under the stress of operating on a fire ground incident. So if you can make it to the MFRI program in Nashville or the FDIC in Indianapolis, please look me up and take time to introduce yourself to me. I'd like the chance to meet some of our listeners.
All right, Rich. Thank you. And for anybody who has any questions for upcoming shows, please drop us an email to podcast@firehouse.com. We've got a ton of questions that have come in over the last few weeks. So the first one comes from a volunteer chief who's starting to run out of people as the days get busier. This is a volunteer chief who's facing pressure with an increased call load each year and a dwindling number of well-trained volunteers. This chief, I'm looking for either a paid on-call system or a combination volunteer paid staffing department that meets the town's support for additional funding. Do you have any advice on how to help him increase his department's staffing?
Well, I think he's not alone, for sure, in the challenges that many fire departments are facing with attracting and retaining quality volunteer or paid on call, or in that case, even career help. My first piece of advice for him is to do his homework and to be prepared to give a presentation to his boss, whether his boss is the town council or whether he has an administrator or a city manager to report to. It's one thing to simply come forward and say there's a problem. It's a different thing to come forward and say there's a problem and here is the proof, the measurements, the metrics of what that problem is. I would encourage this chief to take a look at what's happening around the region. Chances are, if he's having trouble recruiting and retaining firefighters, then that's probably a problem that they're experiencing in his region. See what others have done, or if others are in the same position as him, what have they done to resolve it? Have they gone to a paid-on-call system or hired some full-time, and be able to have some data that shows that the problem is bigger than just his department, because it certainly is. And then I would encourage him to look and see what are some of the national trends in firefighter recruitment and retention and challenges. At the Volunteer Combination and Officer Section website, www.vcos.com, there's a couple of good reports. One's a red ribbon report, and one's called a blue ribbon report. You can download it for free. That talks about the challenges with volunteer recruitment and retention, and then what some of the solutions are that different places have implemented to address those challenges, and both of those reports are very good resources. I would also encourage his chief to take a look at the trends that have been developing in his department. When you say, you know, we're having a recruitment and retention challenge, those problems don't typically just pop up overnight. Chances are he's seen some, there has been some trends, whether he's seen them or not. There's probably have been some trends, get together some data on how long people are staying before they leave. So, you know, they're a tenure statistic. The average age of firefighters, if he's having, you know, turnover, he's probably seeing the average age of firefighters trending downward. Maybe he's a department that hired a number of firefighters, you know, 20 or 25 years ago, so he's seeing a significant trend in retirements from the fire department as a result of, you know, something that happened 25 years ago. So all of this data, when you take a look at it and get it in front of you and take a look at it, is probably going to show that there is some trend activity that is leading up to the problem that he's facing. So it wasn't like I just woke up this morning and said, oh, I got a recruitment and retention problem, and it started today. Well, he may have started dealing with it today, but it's probably a problem that has been inching its way along, and now it's just grown in its priority to the department where they feel like they need to do something about it. Also in the trend data, look at the call statistics. I think this chief said they have an increasing call load. So look and see what kind of call statistics, how has the calls been increasing, and then put a time frame to that. For example, if they run, say, EMS, and an EMS call on average is an hour and a half to turn a call around, depending on where the hospital is, and assuming that they transport. So if you have an, you know, average call of an hour and a half, and an average number of people on an ambulance call, three or four, you know, whatever his local situation is, shows some trends as to how the total hour commitment of the firefighters has increased over time. It's just not enough to say that we have more calls, but that he has to put that in terms then it means something to the city manager or to the council. We have more calls, which means our people are now having to work X amount of more hours. While they're working more hours, we're also trending down in the number of people we have to work those hours. So you can see how the problem can become larger because you know, I have two trends that are going in opposite directions, increasing number of hours that need to be worked while you're having a decrease in the number of people who need to work those hours. It sounds like he has a volunteer department now. If that's the case, I would encourage him to look at the red and blue ribbon reports and to try to find some incentives that might get members to stay longer or to entice new members to join the department. The solution when you're having a recruitment or retention challenges isn't always to jump to the grand finale solution, and that is hiring career people. There are probably a number of intermittent steps that you can take before you get to that, and that's what I would encourage him to do, both for financial reasons and being able to sell it to his manager and his council, but also in the overall balance of the department. You know, when you start changing the complexion of the department from being volunteer as it has been for, you know, 30 or 40 or 50 years, and you start to introduce career people, it can have an impact on the organization's culture. The culture is going to change. People who are holding on strongly to the affiliation of being volunteer are maybe going to resist some of that change. And you may get there. You may get to where you have to do that, but I'm not sure that he's there yet. So I would encourage him to look for some incentives to recruit and retain his volunteers. And he had mentioned the possibility of a paid-on-call system. You know, that's one solution that I would certainly encourage. If he's tried the incentives and they're not working, then consider having paid-on-call personnel who are paid, you know, by the call or by the hour before he needs to transition to having full-time. Think incremental steps, okay? How can I entice more people to volunteer? Let's see if that's going to work. If that doesn't work, then can I get people who would be willing to work for some pay, you know, pay per call or to be on duty in a station as part of a staffing program during the busiest hours, and, know, eventually, if he can't make that work, and there are a number of places who have found ways to make those solutions work. So I would encourage him not to just say, well, that just won't work here, but to, you know, really seek out some model organizations who have good programs and who have found a way to make it work for him, and be open-minded and introduce some of those ideas into his department. But I really would encourage him to move slow and cautiously and toward becoming a career department, and I certainly have nothing against that, but if you're a totally volunteer department on Monday, you don't want to just introduce career people on Tuesday. There's a maturing process that needs to happen, a recipe, so to speak, that needs to be followed to get from point A, which is where he is today, to maybe point J, which is where he may end up being anyhow, but he can't just jump right straight from A to J and not expect that it's going to cause him some problems or have you know, the counselor or the manager, you know, be concerned about what that kind of change that quickly means. I would also encourage him to involve his department in the problem. Make sure that he's not the only one bearing the concern and bearing the weight and having sleepless nights over these issues, but to get the problem out there into the department and talk about it with the members openly about, we have this problem, so that when solutions start to come up about, you know, maybe transitioning the combination, it's not coming as a surprise to anyone, because it's a problem that has been talked about openly in the department. You know, I would guess with his increasing call load and decreasing members, if he went to his members and said, well, how are you feeling? And they'd probably say, we're feeling pretty beat up, you know, pretty overworked here. And, you know, you might hear the word, you know, burnout and you know, stress and overload, and then engage them in some discussions. Okay, it's good to hear that you're, not good that you're feeling that way, but it's good to hear that you're willing to talk about feeling that way. Now let's talk about some solutions. How can we work through this as a department so that we're not losing members because of stress and burnout? You know, we're losing them because of retirements, or they're moving to another town, but we're not losing them because we're overworking them. And you know, that's a concern that he should lay out there for all the members of the department to get their you know, get their input and ask them for solutions. And then finally, I would encourage him to involve the community leaders. You know, if you have a department that doesn't have the staffing to provide the central services, and as a result stress and burnout is up and you're having turnover, this isn't a fire chief's sole problem. This isn't the fire department's sole problem. It's a community problem. And he probably should involve some community leaders, get them together in a discussion, a focus group, go and talk to the Rotary or the Kiwanis or the Chamber of Commerce, and get the problem out there. I know as fire departments and fire chiefs, we like to keep our problems in-house and keep our dirty laundry in-house, but this is one of those things where if he has tried all the possible solutions, then get some community fingerprints on the problem. Go talk with community leaders and say, you know, we're having this problem, and I'm coming to you because I need for you to help me with some creative solutions, and then I need your support in helping me get those creative solutions put into place. And then some of, you know, you might have a person in the community, you know, stand up in front of the group and say, well, why don't we all go to our employees and see if we can get employees to volunteer? You know, you may get half a dozen new volunteers out of just doing a, you know, a presentation to a Kiwanis or a council, and then they might go back and find they don't have anybody in their department who can or is willing to volunteer, and then they're even more aware of the problem. Okay, now I get it, you know. Yeah, I thought the solution was just as easy as just going and asking more people to volunteer. Now I'm starting to see that it's a little more complex than that, given the amount of hours that it takes and the commitment and the obligation and being on call and having to answer the calls, that it's a little more complex. And then you get some business leaders who help to buy into the problem. And I think that this fire chief would do himself well mentally to say, this isn't my problem, this is our problem. It's our fire department's problem, it's our town's problem, it's our community's problem, it's the problem of the people who live here, the problem of the business owners, and I need the bigger group to help find the solution to this problem. So that would be my suggestion to the volunteer chief.
All right, Rich, well, thank you very much. Like most of the issues we run into on this show. I'm sure that could be the advice could be taken by many chiefs and departments out there. So we'll be right back after this break.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox here on Radio at firehouse.com. Rich, the second question comes from the chief of a mid-sized department with 16 engines, 5 ladders, 11 ambulances, and a half dozen special units. The city is divided into 3 districts with 3 district chiefs on duty around the clock. It says, during the daytime, we have several staff chiefs available to respond to assist with staging, safety, and other command-level tasks. After 6 p.m., we're down to just the 3 chief officers for the city. This chief is trying to establish a full-time safety officer that's either a 24-hour shift or a shift from 6 p.m. to 8 a.m. to cover the city as a safety officer. And the city manager is saying that the position is too expensive to fill. He wants to have at least a lieutenant fill that position, but a captain would be more inept to that position and can do investigations, follow-ups, et cetera, during the evening if there's no calls. So any advice on how to get this chief to help the city realize that the city could save money eventually with the lack of on-duty injuries and whatnot with the full-time safety officer position?
Well, I applaud the chief for being safety-focused and wanting to have somebody who is able to respond to calls and be focused just on safety. There are a number of departments out there that I have seen and heard and read about who on incidents don't have somebody in a safety position, and that has the incident commander doing double duty, multitasking, being drawn off task. It's a topic, again, Pete, going back to what we said at the beginning of the podcast about my presentations at FDIC and staff in command about fire ground command decision making under stress. One of those things that stress the incident commander is having to also perform multiple command functions on the scene of a fire, like being the safety officer and other ancillary duties. And it's a tough position to be in, and it can draw the commander off task as to what he or she is supposed to be paying attention to, and that's part of the things that I'll be talking about during those programs. So credit to the chief for realizing he needs to have a safety person responding to these incidents. Now, even though he'd said his apparatus at 16 engines and 5 ladders and 11 ambulances, what he didn't talk specifically about was the size of his community, population, square miles, and how many firefighters they have total, and how many firefighters they have on duty at a time. And that information perhaps could have helped me with him craft, you know, the best answer. So I'm going to have to make some assumptions and go with some of the things that he is didn't disclose, and see what I can do to offer him some advice. When it comes to trying to get this justified to the city manager, I would encourage him to try to frame up the problem that needs to be solved. If he says he wants to have a safety officer to reduce firefighter injuries, and then the city manager says, well, how many firefighter injuries have you had at fire scenes from 6 p.m. to 8 a.m., he should have that data in hand. He should be ready to present that data that says, these are the injuries that we've had from 6 p.m. to 8 a.m., and we have a different experience with firefighter injuries in the daytime because we have a staff person who can go to the incident and serve as a safety officer. So what he's doing is creating a nexus of the relationship of a safety officer directly results in less injuries versus that during the times when he doesn't have it, that he can show that there is maybe a higher occurrence of firefighter injuries. And then that can equate to lost time, and that can equate to a dollar amount that can be attached to the expense of having a firefighter injury. So he can use that data to help him in his justification. Now, I don't know a whole lot about, he says a mid-sized department. In my experience, a department with 16 engines and 5 ladders and 11 ambulances is a pretty good-sized department. I would encourage him to go out and find other departments of similar size that have the type of position that he's trying to get, and talk to them and say, how did you get this position justified, and what does this person do, and do you have a job description that I could use as a model for the position that we're trying to create? I would guess that in departments that have people in safety positions around the clock, that those people probably perform more duties than just being a response safety officer on an incident. They're multitask. They're multi-talented in the things that they can bring to the department. So maybe it's, you know, safety, health, and wellness, and that might be a little bit difficult to do from 6 p.m. to 8 a.m. because I don't think you're going to have your, you know, person working with the firefighters on the treadmill at 2 in the morning, but it might be a little more difficult to have this person multi-talented in a safety capacity. I know he said something about having the person perhaps be doing follow-ups on investigations, and he's along to the flavor of having this person do more than just incident response and being the safety officer. And again, one statistic he didn't share is their fire experience to know how many incidents they're having and you know, how serious their fire losses and injury data is, and that's all information will be very beneficial in helping to frame up the solution. However, if he still is coming into a roadblock with getting this approved by the city manager, then I'm going to lay down the gauntlet and challenge him to find other creative ways to accomplish the end result, because I think he's right on track with having the need to have a safety-focused person on this on a scene of an incident. And with that kind of staffing, again, not knowing their fire experience, I would consider encouraging him to train two captains on each shift to perform safety duties and pick two captains that are from another thing he doesn't mention is how many stations they have. So again, I'm having to make some assumptions, 16 engines, maybe 16 stations, something like that. Try to pick two captains who would be on, say, opposite ends of the town so that they're not typically on the same response. You know, if one captain's going to an incident, the other captain wouldn't be first due. So, you know, geographically try to have these captains separated so that when the first captain is due on a call, the second captain, either in a staff vehicle or with his entire company, responds to the call and assumes the position of safety. Now, I have heard of departments who not only have a safety officer respond, but they have a safety company respond. So a company of three or a company of four assumes the safety duties, and they help the safety officer, and maybe they'll, you know, take up positions on the A, B, and D side of the building, or, you know, somebody will do air monitoring on the interior. So, you know, they have a whole company making sure that rehab is set up, and, you know, a whole company of firefighters assigned to safety. But the captain then would be the overall safety coordinator if he wanted to respond with his entire company, or, you know, respond individually in a staff vehicle, although that would leave that company that he left perhaps short-staffed. So that's something that needs to be considered as well. Alternatively, he could consider having two of his district chiefs respond to every working fire. He's got three district chiefs in the town, again, not knowing the fire experience as to how feasible this is, but alternatively, he could have two of the district chiefs respond to every working fire. One of them serves as the incident commander. The second chief serves as the safety officer. You know, it doesn't necessarily achieve some other benefits like follow-up to investigations and safety programs and the kind of things that he wants to have this new position do, but it, you know, it's a good alternative. Finally, what I would encourage him to do is to reach out to other chiefs of communities of similar size and consistency and look for model programs that have had success in reducing on-the-job injuries, as he says that this person can help do, and use the data of the success that others have had to help make his argument to a city manager. In other words, he could go and say, you know, the best practices in our industry says, you know, this, and here are some communities who have reduced lost time or on-the-job injuries or workers' comp claims as a result of having a person whose job is focused on safety. And I think it's always very powerful when you can show a community, especially of similar size and consistency, who has been successful at doing what you want to do, so that you can put it out there and say, you know, here's what we want to do, and here's an example of some other places that have done it and have been successful at doing it. You know, one of the places he might look is in the database of the National Fire Academy at the Learning Resource Center to see who out there has written any executive fire officer program applied research projects on having a safety officer or an on-duty safety officer or somebody whose position is dedicated predominantly to safety. He could also reach out to the Fire Department Safety Officer Association, FDSOA, and ask them if they could offer him up any leads on places that have successful programs that he could draw data from and use in his defense to his city manager based on what he wants to accomplish. So that would be my advice for the chief of the mid-sized department who wants to have somebody dedicated to safety.
Thanks, Rich. The idea of a safety company is very good. We've talked about that in our office before, of a safety company coming to the scene and not only monitoring conditions, but kind of serving as the two in, two out to the fact of throwing ground ladders and just really having somebody do a really good 360 and helping monitor the interior conditions. So,
yeah, I'll also plug, you know, and again, this is part of what I speak about when I talk about the fire ground command decision making under stress, is we bring companies to the scenes of fire and we have them work in teams of three and four. And there's very good reasons that we do that. One, because the work is very challenging and complex, both physically and mentally. And if something happens to one, then there's others to help them out of their situation. Well, we don't do that with command. We have a single incident commander who has to, you know, take in all these inputs and carry all this stress and make all these decisions, and they have no one to turn to and say, what do you think? Am I making a good decision or a bad decision? Am I doing it right or doing it wrong? Or I'm a little overwhelmed here. Can you help me out? You know, we put the incident commander in charge, and then we put him alone in the you know, the command vehicle or the front yard of the building on fire and expect them to perform flawlessly in a position where they're unsupported. They have no help. And, you know, the safety company or command support company can be somebody who can provide, you know, safety and perhaps an aide or a scribe for the incident commander if the incident is the size it warrants it. So, you know, there's a lot of utility that could come from having a company dedicated to that.
Interesting. Okay. All right, Rich. Well, thank you very much. We look forward to seeing you pretty soon at FDIC. And, again, thank you for the listeners. If you do have any questions, please do drop us an email to podcast@firehouse.com. Rich, we'll see you again real soon here on the Leaders Toolbox.
Thank you. Thanks to all the listeners for both tuning in and for your kind feedback on the program.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.